The following episode of How Did This Get Made is sponsored by LegalZoom. They're helping keep the show free. If you go to LegalZoom.com and enter the code EARWOLF, you'll get a discount and 100% of what you spend there comes directly back to the show. LegalZoom is the best place to help with your legal needs. They're not a law firm, but they provide self-help services at your direction. For more information on how to support this show and the rest of the EARWOLF podcast network, go to EARWOLF.com/insider.
Nicolas Cage goes to a pagan island run by women to solve a crime of a girl that may or may not exist and definitely not get stung by bees. We saw The Wicker Man, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? Gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Did you know you wonder how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made, the show where we try to make sense of the movies that make no sense. We have actually a really big show for you today. Not only are we going to talk about The Wicker Man, but we have a special call-in guest. That's right, the producer and co-writer of Skyline is going to call in and talk a little bit about the movie, answer some of our questions, and we will get to that a little bit later in the episode, plus a very big announcement about a new show that we're going to be doing with two amazing guests. So stay tuned for that. We got a lot of show today. As always, I am Paul Scheer, and I am joined by June Diane Raphael and Jason Manzoukas. How are you guys?
Hi, Paul.
Hello,
everybody. What's going on?
Nothing much for all of our new listeners here on Earwolf. This is how the show works. We watch a bad movie. We sit around. We talk about it. That's it. Each week, we have a special guest. This week is no different. We have a fantastic great guest. You know him from the Nerdist podcast. Please welcome Jonah Ray.
Hello.
How are you?
Good to It's me, Fantastic Jonah Ray. Don't you ever call me Fantastic.
I like Fantastic. No. Well, all right, guys. The Wicker Man.
Oh, guys.
Where do we start on this movie?
For a long time in this movie, I was like, this is boring. This is like, wait a minute, he punches women now? Okay, I'm on board for this.
Well, the beginning of the movie, which has nothing to do with the rest of the movie, opens up in this coffee shop. And it's like he's looking at a self-help book on tape, but it's like the weird dialogue that was like written in a high school play, like, if I just ate one of them burgers, I'd be in a trance too. Like, just,
It's like the bad part of a horror movie where you just like get to the horror part of the movie, you know?
And you know that guy was Aaron Eckhart in... But that's all.
Well, it's because it's a Neil Abute movie, I assumed. But it did that thing to me where I was like,
"Wait, I'm sorry, the guy at the diner was Aaron Eckhart?
The first guy, not the cop. The guy that pays first and leaves is Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
And I was like, oh, because it's Aaron Eckhart, I was like, oh, that's part of the movie. It took me a long time
He's not coming back.
Yeah. It's almost like that opening scene was just like, hey, this is what happens when our characters are not in the movie. It had nothing to do with anything. Nothing. Just the small town.
Or it's almost like somebody was like, hey, Aaron Eckhart's going to stop by and say hi today. Should we just shoot a scene? Why not? I mean, we got some wardrobe. What if we just sat in that diner across the street?
I love the picture that was on the cover of the Everything's Okay.
I want to know who that is.
Who
you know,
is
it's someone's
that guy?
Friend or dad, you know.
I love it because his gesture was so like, I know. Yeah. I know it's not.
It's not. And that only comes back once.
Yeah.
One time. And then there's like a comedy of errors where it's like, it's called Everything Is Okay. All right.
Basically the movie starts off with Nicolas Cage as a motorcycle cop who may or may not be bored with his job. I don't know what they were trying to set up there, but a girl throws a doll out the window. He picks up the doll.
Of a moving car.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, sorry. Of a moving car. He picks up the doll, he pulls over the car, and he gives the doll back to the girl, who is very rude.
Very rude girl.
Yes. Very precocious girl. Yeah.
And
you think it'd be foreshadowing, but it's not really.
Not really. And then she throws the doll back out the window of the car. Nick Cage goes to pick it up, and the car is promptly hit by a giant, like, tractor trailer, and the car explodes.
Yeah.
Killing two people inside.
Not killing two people
but
inside.
But then not killing two people.
Whoa, wait a minute.
This is immediately where the movie becomes, like, absolutely untenable for me. Because I was like, he's been given, like, commendations and awards?
Yes.
For what, though? Because he's like, well, they still haven't found the bodies in the car. And they're like, no. The charred car had no bodies in it. So basically, he was exploded next to an empty car and got citations for it?
He tried.
Also,
he got an effort. You know,
for what, though?
By the way, it seems like he caused the accident.
He did.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so that's what he was commended for.
He was commended for not getting hit by that Mack truck, I think. And then it's like, then the movie again, it's like, have we started this movie? I'm not sure. Like, a cop comes over to his house. This is all just, you're, what am I watching? Like, and he gets this letter from an ex that he reads.
It's like a letter.
Beautiful calligraphy.
I was just going to say, the letter is like from Anne of Green Gables.
Yeah,
it
yeah,
is
yeah.
like so
Be still
insane.
My heart.
It's nice quill pen writing, I thought.
And Nicolas Cage gives one of his best reactions of all time, like reading this letter. It's like, oh, oh, his hands are to his head. It's, oh. The letter basically says, we had a daughter. I didn't tell you, but now she's kidnapped. Come find her. I live on this crazy island.
Oh, she doesn't say that we had a daughter. She says, I had a daughter after we left.
And that was the strangest storytelling.
One of the many reveals that don't make or sense or matter.
And then he brings the letter and shows it to his buddy, and his buddy's like, I mean, ignore this, right? I mean, like, who is this? What, is she an ex-girlfriend? And he goes, no, ex-fiance. And I was like, fuck you.
And then he says, he's like, my ex-fiance, we were close. Oh, I'd hope so. I'd hope you were close when before you got engaged to the lady.
It was. I feel like for like three quarters of this movie, Neil B. was secretly giving Nicolas Cage like downers because his performance is like really kind of sleepy. And then the last 30 minutes, I feel like he just gave him like crack cocaine. And it was just like, punch anybody in the movie you want. It's all women. Go mental. Everything's crazy.
Well, because it feels like his sleepiness feels like they taped the rehearsals. They were just like, or I'm just reading this. I'm just reading this for the first time.
It was a blocking rehearsal.
Yeah, okay, all right, yeah. And everyone's saying stuff with importance, but I feel like no one really knows what they're saying.
Well,
it's like
the guy, his buddy, though, is like a comic actor in the middle of a movie that has no comic actors, where he's like, oh, the plot thickens. No, I didn't even know there was a plot.
Yeah, he goes, I didn't know you had a plot. He goes, oh, I didn't know either.
Oh, they're buddies.
Now I'm realizing, so he must have been suffering. Was he suffering from anxiety before this all happened?
And then
was
it
that
made it
why?
Worse?
Yeah, because then he was on medication after.
Well, he's not wearing suffering. Sweaters. They're wearing comfy sweaters.
Yeah. But is he suffering from anxiety or. Or does he just have crazy hallucinations? Because this whole movie, he's having, like, his hallucinations have hallucinations.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He hallucinates that he jumps into the water to find a dead girl. Then he comes back out, and then he, like, oh, God, that was a bad hallucination. Looks down, finds a dead girl in his lap. Then he wakes up again. It's like, oh, okay, I'm back.
No, but he does that reaction where it happens all the time. Where he's like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Again.
And he just has to pop a pill immediately. Whenever he has a hallucination, he pops
a
pill.
But you think it's going to be like a pain medication, but not like a crazy medication. I feel like the movie, every 15 minutes, every couple of days, somebody would whisper into Neil Butzi, like, hey, this is a horror movie? And he'd be like, oh, fuck, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. We got to shoot something kind of scary today.
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like he would forget and then be like, waterlog one of the kids and put him in Cage's lap. Yeah. Let's roll on that.
Do it. It really makes no sense. So Nicolas Cage goes to find this girl who's on this pretty much female-run pagan island that makes honey.
Not the island where Wonder Woman is from.
No. Different pagans. And he gets on the island by bribing a helicopter pilot who's like, I can't risk my pilot's license. I can't bring you there. And then Nick Cage is like, how about, here, $150.
Yeah, $150.
And he's like, oh, okay, sure. Like, that was it? Like, this guy's whole life and contract, $150.
And then, like, one of the worst green screen flying shots.
Terrible. Yeah, and it wasn't a helicopter. It was a seaplane.
You're right. And now they get to this island run by women, and this is where the movie takes off to full-on weird.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines is he arrives on the island. He's, like, trying to walk. He's trying to get his bearings. And he goes to, like, the bar or whatever. Yeah. And the woman is like, this here is mead. It's one of the pleasures of our island. And I was like, what? What the fuck is happening? It's the same woman who, when he says, do you think you can swing it?
Like the blonde Kathy Bates.
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, yeah. He goes, do you think you can, like, I need a room for the night. Do you think you can swing it? And she's like, swing it? What is that, city talk?
Yeah.
I was like, what?
This is like the island of furtive glances, too. Everyone here, it's like a lot of close-ups on people's eyes going from left to right, like, ooh, 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 ooh. And it's super weird, like, when he first gets to the island, like, these guys are carrying a bleeding bag.
That was crazy.
And it's wiggling around, and they're talking to him, like, oh, you're a cop, aren't you? And he goes,
what's in the bag? A shark? Like, that was his first.
No, the best was the sassy 20s response. Like, it's like, he's all, it helps to look at the picture when you're trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, you know.
But by the way, he keeps on asking everybody on that island.
Oh, my God.
Where, if they recognize this picture of Roham. It's like, there are 12 people on this island. Yeah. It's a population of 20 people.
He arrives
they're
on
all
the island
lying to you.
And is immediately treats everyone like they're a hostile witness. He is has A, no jurisdiction.
None.
Yeah.
Zero. Well,
they keep on telling him that, too. He's like, I'm a cop from the mainland. It's like, you're from California. Yeah. We're an island off of Washington. Yeah. This is private property.
Yeah.
He has no business being there.
It's also like, and I just don't understand why he didn't question what the fuck was happening on this island.
Never.
It's like, this child is the least of our concerns.
Yeah, yeah.
There's systematic child abuse.
Yeah.
And potentially, like, there are bigger things happening.
Well, look, when he goes to the shark bag, when he goes, what's in the bag? The shark. And they open it for him. He looks at it. He's like, oh. And then
we
he
don't
walks
see it.
We
they all laugh.
Don't
they all laugh at him.
They laugh at him. But what was in that fucking bag?
Embarrassment for Nick Cage. I really wanted him to. I kept on imagining. The movie was a lot more fun for me when I imagined him as the same character from Bad Lieutenant.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking, too. Like, this is a prequel to him.
Yeah, exactly. This is before he gets really into drugs and really crazy.
I also love that he wore that wool suit, like, every single day on that island.
And that terrible hair. Every day he had to get up and put that horrible hair on.
That hair was, like, jet black. Yeah. That was a black that does not occur in nature.
Yeah. Like, now, once again, like, these people are being weird to him, but they're not being outright mean to him. And when he does that thing with the mead, he takes the glass of mead and starts banging it on the thing like a gavel. All right, you're all suspects. I'm interviewing all of you. It's like, what? Where did that come from?
Have you ever had mead, Paul? Yeah. Oh, it's crazy. It's tough stuff.
I just thought, like, I was like, well, of course they want to kill this guy. He's abusing them. I have a clip, actually, from when Nicolas Cage breaks into a schoolhouse to question a teacher and kindergarten students. Yeah. Here you go.
It's all the girls from Village of the Damned.
Yes.
Will you tell us what man represents in his purest form? Yes.
Phallic symbol.
How dare you stand there and frighten my children?
Sorry, I'm Edward Malus from California.
Oh!
I'm a policeman.
What?
See my badge?
Put that back!
Sorry, you're gonna have to bear with me.
There he goes.
You little liars.
He's accusing the kids.
And you're the biggest liar of them all. I am warning you. You tell me another and I'll arrest you myself. That is a promise, Miss...
Rose. Sister Rose.
Of course. Another plant. Rose.
Yeah.
But that is the level of dialogue that you're getting. That is the scene where he interrogates people in a school. Like you said, girls from the Children of the Dam.
Yeah.
And he's calling everybody liars.
Well, but what has been cut out of that scene.
Yes.
I mean, like, I can't believe we didn't keep it in. Shame on us. Is the part where he opens a desk and finds a bird in it.
Well,
I was going to leave that in.
Desk. But it would. You can't see it. He opens up a desk. Yeah. And it goes, oh, why was that crow in there? It's like, because we were trying to keep it, see how long it would live inside that desk. Yeah. And he's like, what a terrible assignment.
Yeah.
Everybody's weird.
He also, like, erases the blackboard and writes his own name on it.
I had a fantasy that island was there just to try and figure out a theorem, like a mathematical theorem that was going to solve world hunger. And they almost had it. He's like, hold on. He just erases all the work.
Well, like, and he writes nothing important. Just his name.
And then he goes and gets they never heard of this girl, and then he gets the class registry, and he sees her name, and
her
just a line.
Beautifully written.
Yeah,
beautifully written.
And then it's just crossed out with one line.
Well, can I ask you guys a question?
Because there was something I was not tracking in this movie. For a while, I felt like they were saying she had already been killed the year prior, and that's why the harvest was so bad. And then it was that she was going to be killed now because the harvest was so bad.
Can somebody explain
that to me?
I think there's a rebirth and birth thing. Didn't they have that whole thing
Of death, the celebration of death and rebirth.
Yeah. So maybe she was killed
and then rebirth, but then they have to kill her again because the harvest is bad.
I don't know. I couldn't figure out, because I was like, at a certain point, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. She's dead already.
Yeah.
So he's searching for a dead girl.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, nope, she's not dead. No. Why? Well, who knows? And the mother's just like, that's not her grave. And he's like, okay, I guess I believe you now. Well, Rowan? Rowan?
That red sweater showed up in like five different
spots. He's always in a different condition.
Well, he definitely is having these hallucinations, but then the hallucinations turn out not to be hallucinations because they are real. Like, he is finding the red sweater all over the place. Like, he is seeing this girl. And I mean, the island is terrible about hiding clues, by the way, too. If they wanted to cover up that this girl was here, when the guy comes to the island, just hide all the clues.
There's a lot of brush you can put over things.
Yeah.
Basically, everywhere he went, he was like, I gotta find a picture. Oh, here it is. Like, nothing was ever hidden.
Without spoiling the end of the movie, spoiler alert, kill him. with that being said, like, I'm assuming, like, that's the point of it. They want him to find these clues. They want to put him through
the
whole thing. Who fucking knows?
Yeah, like, why are we going through all this trouble?
Because just to burn him in the Wicker Man, which... Spoiler alert. But that's basically the end. They burn him alive in the Wicker Man. They go, you came here to be burned.
As part of, and you realize the last, 10 years of his life were all set up for this moment.
Which is crazy. I mean, first of all, I want to go back to one other thing, too, which is about 25 minutes into the movie, they do black and white flashbacks to the first 25 minutes of the movie. Like, literally, they have a 5-minute sequence that relives the first 10 minutes of the film.
It's like that crappy friend. It's like, remember when we were at that party? It was great, man.
We were just sitting here.
Yeah, man. It was great. It was a good time.
I love that there's the shit in this movie where Nick Cage, it's lost at its worst. When something obvious happens that you should just ask a definitive question about and you simply don't. It's like he's talking to Molly Parker in the school, right? Who's the teacher. Then he walks down the hill and sees Molly Parker again because apparently there's twins everywhere on this island.
Oh, yeah.
He sees Molly Parker again. Oh, maybe the little girl was a twin. Maybe
I was thinking that there was two of them.
There's a bunch of twins. And the creepy blind twins.
Oh, I didn't like them at all.
No, they weren't any good.
Anyway, so he sees Molly Parker again, and he goes, hey, wait, didn't I just talk to you? And she's like, no. And he's like, all right. And I'm like, wait, you are literally the worst police officer. You're a police detective, and you are doing the worst job.
Well, he's a bike cop.
Putting anything together. I mean, because you're right. There were twins everywhere he went. All he saw were twins.
Yep.
So, he's not... There's nothing connective.
There's also, like, Frances Conroy. He talks to Frances Conroy in her house. She's the doctor and photographer. Yes. And then two girls in beekeeper outfits show up and, like, escort her away.
And I'm
like,
scary beekeeper outfits.
Scary
old-timey beekeeper.
And instead of following the people, he breaks into her house.
Yeah, I love that. Hiding behind the bush and running over to
it. The worst.
Yeah. I also, back of the scene with the bar when he's like yelling at everybody.
Yeah.
And then the bee goes and like he slams the mug down on the bee and kills it. And she's like, why would you do that? I really like, when I first saw the movie, I was like, oh, they're all bees in human form. Ooh. Oh, this is going to be great.
I did love though during the end harvest festival when they were all in their costumes getting ready to kill the Wicker Man that there were two little girls dressed up as bees.
Yeah. My girlfriend Deanna, she's like, we have to be those bees for Halloween.
That's with them. All these elaborate, weird, like carnival costumes, and then just like store bought.
Two like blind melon.
Well, I mean, the whole idea too that this is the whole rub of the story is that Nicolas Cage is allergic to bees, and he's going to an island where their main output is honey and bees.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the shot of him putting like he has his gun in, and then he gets like the little bee. Allergen stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
he has an EpiPen with him. And his EpiPen, by the way, is giant. Like, he has, like, a metal box with two... Like, it was, like, a comical-sized box of EpiPens. Yeah. Like, all right.
Well, I feel like they made so many, like, wickedly obvious moves to be like, and here is his bee medicine.
Yeah. You better have this. Yeah. But he also doesn't travel with his bee medicine.
No.
The bee medicine stays in the hotel.
He does travel with his tapes, though.
Yeah, yeah.
He does travel.
Oh, my God.
And that's what
they
want.
That was the craziest moment. The morning that he woke up in that hotel lodge place, he looks downstairs over the banister and those two fucking creepy twins start talking in unison.
Yeah.
And his response is, who moved my everything okay tapes? Yeah. Like, that is...
He was really worried about who took his... And why did they take his audiobook?
Why
in the grand scheme of everything?
Take his gun! Take his gun away from him.
Well, maybe that would make him feel safer.
One of the best moments, though, is toward the end when Sister Rose is... I think she purchased him on her bicycle.
Yeah.
He gets so mad at her and he wants that bike.
Yeah, he's like, get off the bike.
He pulls a gun at a woman.
Yeah. He pulls a gun on her.
Bicycle. To take her bike.
Step away from the bicycle.
Yeah. My favorite
Which
thing was
a callback to Con Air. Step away from the bunny rabbit.
Oh my God. That's amazing. One of my favorite things is anytime Nicolas Cage was anywhere and heard a sound, he would think it was his daughter.
Yeah,
Rowan? And it's just like...
Who he has no connection
He's
with.
On a None. Fucking island He's with trees and birds and animals. Yeah. And, I mean, also, he loves to get information but cut people off at the same time. He's like, just tell me what I need to know. And it's like, okay, well, listen. Okay, where is the thing? Well, I'll tell you. Now, we all go over here. No, Carrie, shut up. Where do you go? Like, he's always cutting them off in the middle of what they're saying.
I love the bike riding. Every time he was on a bike, me and Deanna would just crack
He's
out.
On, like, an old school bike. Yeah. Just and they don't even see when he originally gets the bike.
No, he just shows
up. He shows up. On a bike. Can we also talk about his love interest, who looks like Fiona Apple?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they met 10 years ago, which means that she was like in her early 20s.
Early, if not younger. She's a child.
And Nicolas Cage is just, he's like, oh, 10 years ago, like they met. And they have the most...
Awkward kissing.
That was so upsetting.
There was that.
It's like Mormons. It was Mormon so making upsetting. Out.
Yeah. There was also him being like, what happened? You know, like, he wants to talk about how she left him at the altar or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Her daughter is missing. Like, there are things that are more important right now than her giving you an excuse as to why she left.
What about the tongueless men?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
there were so many other bigger things going on this island. But, and he was only concerned with the very basis of
it. Oh, yeah.
Like, why don't you call in some backup? I mean, first of all, he doesn't have a phone that works, which is the other...
Well, he didn't get reception, man.
Yeah, they don't get reception after a parade. But this is one of the scenes. He finds the doll that was thrown out the window earlier in the movie. He digs through a grave and then finds that doll again, but the face is slightly burnt off of it.
And also, he thinks at this point, the girl was burned to death, maybe.
Maybe, right. Yeah, so she was burned with the doll.
She will be burned to death, because Molly Parker's like, she'll burn to death. And he was like, what did you say? And she said, she burns to death.
And she's all pulling at her collar.
Yeah, like really, obvious.
She's right behind me.
I'm sorry to backtrack. Can someone explain to me the wordplay of the day of tomorrow?
Oh, I wrote that down.
I don't know.
I don't understand.
He was like, what happens the day after tomorrow? And it's like, oh, in 2 days? Yeah, nothing. No, I mean tomorrow. Oh, tomorrow. Like, it was like there was some weird ass word.
And then take me with you.
Lily Sobieski. All right, well, this is a clip of him trying to get some information about the burnt doll from his girlfriend.
This is where the movie became amazing.
Yeah, at this point, it kicks in here in the third act where it goes bonkers. Here you go.
How'd it get burned?
I don't know!
Tell me!
Can we just play it again?
Yeah,
just because I need to hear this.
Yeah. How'd it get burned?
I don't know!
Tell me!
Wait a second. Is he talking to the Fiona Apple woman?
Yes!
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Holy shit.
You don't know where she's coming from the entire time. You're like, is she just really bad at covering up the conspiracy? Is she happy that he's going to die?
You
is she
have
sad?
No idea.
No idea.
Oh my favorite part is when he's interrogating someone and they're doing gardening and some bugs fly into his face. So he's like asking her questions and a bug flies into his eyes. Like, oh!
That's foreshadowing.
Yeah.
That's foreshadowing.
I love that it's the middle of the day. He finally was talking to Ellen Burstyn, who runs the place, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, looking beautiful.
Looking radiant.
Looking gorgeous.
Radiant until she's wearing, like, football faces.
No, it was like her.
Is she cheering on, like fucking Utah or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what is happening?
She was a cheerleader for Miami Dolphins there.
I was going to say, it was kind of like a Braveheart, because she's from a bunch of people. They may never take our lives, but they'll never take our honey.
Anyway, he's talking to Ellen Burstyn. He's like, so do I have your permission to dig up the grave? And she's like, well, I think I already gave it to you, right? It's the middle of the afternoon. And it's like, well, okay, gotta dig up that grave. Guess I'll do it in the middle of the night.
Yeah, yeah, near the creepy cemetery.
Literally goes and digs up a child. Like, you're a police officer. Like, there's a worse time to gather evidence.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I said to June, I said, like, I felt like this whole movie was, like, shot, like, they shot it in order and then they edited it way out of order. It's like, when did he get the bike? Why is it night? How many days has he been here? Like, is it night already? Oh. Like, what is he doing to pass his time during
too,
this?
Like, how he was planning on enforcing, should he figure out this crime? Like, what was the plan beyond, like, figuring it out?
That's true.
He could not enforce anything.
No power.
But when does, like, I guess what my biggest question still is, what is a hallucination and what is not a hallucination? Because he gets stung by bees. He runs into this, like, bee field, and he's like, oh, bees! And he starts running, and he runs deeper into the bee field, gets more stings, he passes out, and he wakes up with only one bee sting on him.
Oh, wait a minute. And then Francis Conroy is like, oh, we did it the old-fashioned way. And I was like, what is that?
Yeah, tell me what that is.
So interested in that.
And then he walks around the house, and he opens up all these weird doors.
Oh, the beard.
And there's a woman with a bee beard, and then a guy in a bed with, like, bee stings all over his face.
And an eye missing.
Yeah, and I was wondering,
and
is
then
that
he walks
him?
By Ellen Burstyn's room and doesn't go in.
No.
Yeah. And he's trying to find her.
And Ellen Burstyn is in a bed that's, like a shining light, and she's, like, sitting in this beautiful...
She's the queen bee.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, let's be honest. The movie is...
Guys, the movie is...
The
uses a metaphor.
I love it.
The movie is pretty gorgeous, though. It's like, if you're not paying attention, it seems like a capable, really well-shot movie.
Yeah, the silence,
like, the sets. Like, the locations was all... It's all very... I want to go there, wherever that is.
Yeah, we'll see a beautiful island.
Summer Isle.
Yeah, I want to go... Disney's Summer Isle.
Summer Isle.
I did think that one of the cool moments in the movie that I did enjoy, actually, is when he's getting stung by the bees and is, like, racing through the bee fields, and then it pulls out into, like, an overhead shot. The trails that walk through that area are all honeycomb. So, like, the whole field looks like a honeycomb. I thought that was neat.
Wait, so I'm sorry. Did we ever find out what the old-fashioned way was
to?
No.
Okay. My theory on it was
unless
that...
you guys watched the unrated cut. I didn't.
So. My theory was that she transferred all of his bee stings to that guy in the room who had all the bee stings because he had no bee stings on him. Like, he was getting stung in the face, and he, 2 minutes later, was totally fine.
I don't get it, guys.
All right, but
I wish I did. But I really wish I did, guys.
I think there's,
like,
something there, but you just got to be real dumb.
So now, third act kicks in. Nicolas Cage... just cold cocks women now.
He's
pulling guns on women. He's ripping masks off children.
This is where it becomes Bad Lieutenant.
Yes.
He becomes Bad Lieutenant for the last 30 minutes.
It's amazing. Like, he's having a full-on meltdown. He gets into, like, a karate fight with Lily Sobieski.
Yeah.
Like, literally kicking her in the gut, and she flies back into
with
a wall.
With the weirdest, longest pass-out scene, where she just keeps on going,
Oh, by the way, what was her end game? Because she seemed to want out, and then...
Yeah. No, she didn't. That's the end scene.
That's all a part, but
it's
why?
All a trick. Who fucking knows?
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Also, to upset the patriarchy? I don't understand, man.
It made no sense. And then the best part of the movie, in my opinion, is after he cold cocks another woman, he steals her bear costume.
Oh, yeah.
He puts on a bear costume to get in a processional of other people. That's where the bee costumes were. He's in a bear costume.
He's the only bear, though.
He's the only bear because because he's stealing the mother
sister,
bear.
Sister Beach.
Sister Beach's bear costume.
Which is a great conversation they have. Oh, I can't fit in the bear costume. I'm going to have to get America.
That is so crazy because that is one of the only scenes in the movie in which we're watching people that aren't Nicolas Cage. It stuck out like you almost never have scenes that don't feature him in it, right? Because that would be misleading.
Right.
But there is one scene where Sister Beach and the other woman are talking, and it's all about how Sister Beach can't fit in the bear costume anymore, and it's really big, and blah blah blah, and then. Oh, here's Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
So he can get...
Who misses the conversation.
I was like, this is absolute insanity that this is what they're doing.
It's so crazy. I mean, but he's even in when he's in that bear costume, you can see his face.
Oh, yeah.
You can clearly see it's not Sister Beach.
But he then, when he runs into Fiona Apple, lifts the mask up to be like, even though we're walking in public with everybody else on this threatening island, I'm going to show you my face so you know, hey, it's me. I thought I told you to stay at the house. And she's like, I had to come because we're about to kill you, you maniac.
And by the way, I found this out today looking on Wikipedia. Who were two actors in the movie? They were bar patrons. Did you see it?
Oh, no. What did you?
James Franco?
Yes.
Yeah. What?
And someone else.
And Jason Ritter, right?
Jason Ritter.
Yeah.
Both. Did you not in the see that?
I did not see that.
No,
I did not.
I totally missed
it. Where were they?
I looked on Wikipedia too, and I think it was a deleted scene.
Wait, it was in my movie. Wait,
what did when you they, when Lily Sobieski and Fiona Apple goes to a bar afterwards? Yeah. See, that's what happens. I read that and I was waiting for it.
Wait. So we didn't see this.
This is so weird because I didn't see the bees scene.
Oh wow! There's two cuts of this movie out there. All right, so
yeah. Okay, so wait, so what at happened? End of the movie. Yeah, okay,
he saw it. I just read about it.
Okay, yeah. So at the end of the movie, right? They kill Nicolas Cage in The Wicker Man.
Yes,
he's like ah.
Also, another
my legs are broken.
Yeah, that's the thing. The legs, did they break his legs in your version?
I didn't see it. You just hear him ADR line.
Right, that's the thing.
Oh, right. My legs!
Yeah, they in the unrated version, they break his legs violently.
With a mallet.
Oh,
with a mallet.
Really? Yeah. They hobble him like Kathy Bates? Okay. So they burn him in the Wicker Man, and then it cuts to 6 months later. Oh, okay, there's a tag that says 6 months later. And it's a bar scene, and it's James Franco and Jason Ritter, and they're sitting there like, oh, man, this sucks. Yeah, man. They're looking around. It's all like yuppies or whatever. And then one of them catches sight of a hot girl walk by, and they're like, come on, let's go. Yeah, bro. And they walk over, and it's Lily Sobieski and Fiona Apple are sitting there. And they just instantaneously sit down, and they're like, thank God you guys are here. We thought this place was all lawyers and stuff. And they're like, hi. And then the guys are like, instantly, the girls are like, DTF, right? Jersey Shore. The girls are DTF, and the conversation they have is absolute insanity.
Whoa.
James Franco pairs up with Lily. So basically, it turns out they're going to do to these two guys what they did to Nicolas Cage.
Right, right. Yeah.
These guys are
they're
the next Wicker Man. These guys also, inexplicably, just graduated from the police academy. So they also prey on policemen.
Well, it's because they'll have the drive to like be, I can come by myself and go and help out.
But why two this time? Why two? They had a really bad harvest. They needed two.
They got to set it up years in advance. You never know what's going to happen.
Oh, that's true.
It's a 10-year, it's a decade-long plan.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So dumb. So they got to hang out with them. And then get pregnant by them.
Yep.
And then
almost get married,
bail, and then other girls come and join the force as well.
Wow. That's pretty crazy.
Because, you know, that was a reveal of
the
too.
Yeah. That the female cop was one of them.
Yeah. The weird, like, buddy.
Yeah. Who came in to visit him to give him the letter.
Yeah.
She gave him the letter.
She had a lot of weird looks. If you watch that scene, she just has, like, a little... just kind of, she walks away.
Yeah, the effort that these women have gone to...
To just get honey.
I mean, like, the effort they've gone to for their harvest is, I mean, like, millions of dollars were spent on this.
Yeah.
Like, the woman had to get a job as a policewoman.
Send him to the mainland. And also in a very specific, not even off the shore of Washington, D.C.
No.
California.
Yeah.
Far away. Well, Jason, you missed the part that we saw, which I actually do have a clip of. So can we play that clip of, this is the torture scene that happens.
So this was not in the
This wasn't in the cut that you saw, no.
He is getting his legs broken by mallets in this. You can't see it, but you can.
You bitches! This is murder! Murder! You'll all be guilty!
Oh, my God.
And you're doing it for nothing! Killing me won't bring back your goddamn honey! Ah! What? Ah! What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
They're putting a bee thing on his head.
What is that? What is that? What is it? Oh, no, not the bees!
Oh, my God.
Not the bees! Ah! Oh, my eyes!
Yeah, there you go.
Eyes! Ah!
So that is why he is burning.
I gotta say, if I knew I was gonna be killed and the first thing I felt was bees, I think I'd be actually kind of relieved.
Yeah, like, oh, this will kill me before I burn. But then they do, they revive him.
And then just to make
they cut that part.
Really?
Yeah, they revive him.
She shows up, the lady who did the old fashioned way, shows up with one of his things. What are they called?
Oh, my God.
EpiPen.
Yeah, and then like goes up, she's like, okay, we'll do it your way this time.
What?
You know?
And they make him alive so they can burn him alive. Now,
holy shit, that's insane. None of that was in the cut I saw. How about the fact that at the end of the movie, it is dedicated to Johnny Ramone?
Oh, yeah, that's
How fucking weird is that?
I forgot about that.
You know, it's not weird. Earwolf.com, flawless segue. Earwolf.com is actually really great now. We have revamped the website. We have a brand new iPhone app, which is kick-ass. I really like it a lot. If you're not listening to Affirmation Nation, get on that. Now, we also have t-shirts. They're very appropriate for today's episode. We have Ridiculous Cage t-shirts. That's right. Nicolas Cage on a t-shirt screaming. It looks awesome. I love this t-shirt. And go buy them. I don't think people know that we actually have these t-shirts. So if you didn't, check out the website, buy a t-shirt, support the show, support Earwolf. You like listening to free stuff. I like doing stuff for free. So there you go. Also, this is a very big announcement. We have a special episode coming up with Patton Oswalt and Lexi Alexander. Who's Lexi Alexander? Well, she is the director of Punisher Warzone. If you have not seen this movie, oh my lord. It is insane. We'll be releasing a mini episode to give you a little bit more information about that, but that episode will be dropping October 3rd, a day earlier than normal. So check out that episode. It's coming up all here on Earwolf. Leave us comments and messages on the Earwolf boards if you want to do that, or always visit us on How Did This Get Made on our Facebook page. All right, now it's time for a second opinion. Here are some reviews from Amazon from people who liked the movie. I can't believe the negative reviews. So what? He punched three females. It was required. Get over it. Put yourself into his situation. He's trapped in a cult and discovering he can't escape. So you feminist groups need to chill out and stop bashing this film.
Yeah.
Start bashing some women.
Feminist groups really were against this movie. Spooky Chick wrote, I love it.
Oh my god.
While I'm not lucky enough to be a mother myself, I dream of birthing children. So this type of story really hit home.
Small windows of just the sad lives.
Did she like this movie because she hasn't had children? She goes, you can really feel the agony of this woman's lost daughter, especially if you're a parent.
But she
or
wasn't
have
lost.
She wasn't or lost. Or if you have extensive childcare experience. Like me.
Did Whoa,
this is an
no.
advertisement.
Wait, this is Rebecca De Mornay from...
and then the final one, I like this one. This is a guy who agrees with you, Jenna. I like the settings. I like the colors. The acting was excellent. The plot confusing. The end gross. 4 stars.
What?
Am Hartman.
Wow, he's coming from a different angle with this.
Oh my god.
Oh my gosh. Now, you may think, what does Nicolas Cage think about this movie? And let's let him explain. He has a hoarse voice, but you can hear it.
There is a mischievous mind at work on the Wicker Man, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, and I finally kind of said, yeah, I might have known that movie was meant to be absurd, you know? But saying that now after the fact is okay, but to say it before the fact is not, you know? Because, like, you got to let the movie have its own life, you know? You have to let the audience have its own connection and bash it or not bash it or love it or whatever they want to do with it. That's up to the audience.
Pretty Peggy Sue. Oh.
That's the Peggy Sue voice he had in Peggy Sue Got Married.
He is full-blown. He is like one second away from
full
Gary
blunsies.
Busey.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we have a very special segment here on the show today. 2 weeks ago, we reviewed, or 2 episodes ago, we reviewed the movie Skyline. We were contacted on Twitter by the writer and producer of Skyline, Liam O'Donnell. So we're going to go to the phone to him right now to talk to him about Skyline. Please welcome Liam O'Donnell.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on. I'm a longtime fan of Human Giant. I was followed Paul on Twitter. I saw it come up and dreaded it for 2 weeks, but ended up actually enjoying all the things you guys had to say about the movie and got a real kick out of it.
Did you take issue with anything that we said? Were we mean? Did you feel like we were mean?
I didn't feel like it was mean. I thought it was like one of the, there was a couple, I like that you guys at least acknowledged that it was done with this kind of independent spirit and that there was like a lot of cool things about the world, but it just didn't really come together the way you wanted, which is kind of, I think how we feel about it too. So it was at the end of the day, I kind of, you know, I see all the criticisms.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like you put this whole project together fairly quickly, kind of outside the traditional studio system.
Yeah, we really just kind of did it on our own. And it's kind of like, we had like a 3 to 5 page treatment and like some artwork, and people were already like, gave us like, we already got like investments for like 800 grand, like go do it, because it was all going to be set in Greg's apartment. So there was really like, and it was so low budget. So I think it was one of those things where you got like such early success off of like minimal amount of figuring things right all the way through. Like you guys even said, you're making fun of Faison's quote about like, yeah, they wrote in a month. Like we literally did write it in a month. There was a point where we were going to just do improv, and we're like, yeah, maybe we should write something down. And then, so we wrote a draft in a month, and then kind of rewrote it in another month, and then it was like already cast and ready to go. And so, yeah, I think it was just one of those situations of being so frustrated with development and how long it takes to get something done, and then being like, we have the cameras, we have this visual effects facility, we have the setting, you know, we've got talent signed up, let's just go. And there was really no reason to go so quickly other than our own kind of like, you know, ambition and naivete about how difficult it was going to be.
I didn't know what Donald Faison did. Was he a movie star?
No, he was a visual effects guy.
He was a visual.
Yeah, you're right. He's a visual effects guy. He's actually based on...
I just won $100.
He's based on you?
He's based on Greg Strauss, one of the directors.
And you're saying that was Greg Strauss' apartment you guys shot it in?
Yeah, it was his apartment. It's his Ferrari. And,
And it's his automatic blinds?
Yeah. It's his kind of attitude. My co-writer, Joshua Cordes... Like, it's kind of, when he came out here like 10 years ago, it was kind of the Wild West days of visual effects. And there was like, you know, all these kind of young nerds with all this money. But, you know, that gets translated into like cooler stars with money. But
yeah, totally.
That was the real story.
Okay, and then my other question that we were talking about in the movie was, how did they... there is a kind of a question of the cheating, right? Because in the beginning of the movie, like they,
you guys totally ripped apart this like this whole thing that got cut. It was a whole different location and like a dancing scene at a nightclub.
Wait, we missed dancing?
Yes.
How dare you cut out dancing, Liam? How dare you?
So they cut around it. You guys are like, how did they warp upstairs and people are in the bathroom? And it's one of those things where you're like, you know, just hands over your eyes in the editing bay. But that whole part's a bit of a mess.
Okay, so that was just cutting for time, I imagine.
You're cutting for time. You cut a whole scene where there was like a more conflict between them before that fight, and it made sense. You actually saw Faison kind of pair off with the younger girl. Crystal Reed was the actress, and go into the bathroom. And as far as the camera, she was established as it was actually her camera, and all the stuff got cut.
You're answering all of our questions.
It was actually her camera. It wasn't the New York guy's camera, because she was supposed to be kind of a young photo girl who worked for him in the visual effects, all on the editing room floor. But
all right,
very astute viewers that you guys are.
Now, is there a potential for the sequel? Because I feel like it's set up so clearly for a sequel. It was successful at the box office, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was disappointing, but it ended up making around $80 million worldwide.
It's amazing.
China and Japan, but domestic, yeah, it was obviously would have been a little more, because, you know, when you do an independent like this, you sell all the foreign and you don't make anything off of it.
Oh, that sucks, Eric.
And so, but yeah, no, there, I mean, it, that's a big enough number that it's possible. It's just trying to figure out how to get something, you know, that tells the kind of more epic story that we're trying to, you know.
Yeah, but when the movie ends, they're like deep inside the Skygyna. You know, like, I feel like that sets it up perfectly.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, like, the script, like, it was originally like, okay, they just get sucked in and we want to end super bleak and that's it. And then, like, you know, your team is like, you got to do something at the ending. And we started with, like, okay, how about she just wakes up and there's, like, a mysterious voice on there and, where, you know, we'll get to that later. And then it just kept getting, people wanted more and more of what was on the ship. And then it ends up being like, it's an entire prologue for another movie, which is where it all kind of ended up.
Yeah. And his brain was affected because he had seen it enough that he became like, that's how his brain became that hybrid.
Yeah. It's just like Venom, you know, like, you know, bitten by enough snakes and the idea was that he had been exposed enough that he was no longer affected, but yeah. So that's why it ends up being like, it feels like it's the beginning to another act, and then it kind of ends. But yeah,
But it was a kick-ass ending. I mean, it's like it comes up because you don't think that that's going to happen. I mean, there's that great scene at the end where they kind of get sucked up, which is really awesome to look at. And then it just goes on. Yeah, and it really takes a turn there.
I really enjoyed it when I felt like it was really bleak when they ripped when you guys ripped Eric Balfour's head off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like,
that was so much better before the MPAA got it because it was in the wide and we cut to a close-up and you really saw his head get ripped off, and I do like throwing his limp body into the waist. Yeah. At the bottom.
Is there anything else that was cut out or anything that you couldn't do for the theatrical cut?
Yeah, the whole red brain, blue brain thing, which is just completely asinine, that is because of the MPAA. It was actually like just kind of wet normal brains, and his brain had kind of the veiny effect on it.
Uh-huh.
And they said, you can't do that. You have to make these brains look sci-fi. So we had to add
really
glow. But then when they're all glowing blue, how could you tell who's apart? And someone's bright idea was make it red. So that's one of those things that really pisses me off from the MPAA. And just there was cooler brain ripping shots from David Zayas in the garage and stuff like that. They just said it was too like prolonged violence too. Like I think he might have beat up the big vagina drone for a longer period of time, too.
Oh, you got to beat up those big vagina drones. I'm just begging for it.
And David Zayas said you wrote the part for him. Did you know him before the film?
No, we didn't know him. We just knew Dexter. Oh, you know what? There is something else that got cut off. Because the whole, like, pregnant scene from the first act, that was a reshoot because originally they had known they were pregnant, but they weren't sure if they were going to keep it. And that's why Zayas' character was kind of a... The tension between him and Balfour, he was a little bit of a traditional Catholic kind of badass. And so they had a different scene together at night where he was kind of giving him a little shit. And, of course, the studio, when they bought it, they didn't want to touch any, like, abortion thing with the 10-foot pole, which I don't necessarily blame them. But
right.
So that all got cut out, and that might have helped explain some of the – I think it was a little bit more of a meatier role for David. But yeah, we were big fans of Dexter, and so we wrote for him.
Now, I see here that you're producing a movie right now that's directed by Barry Levinson. What's that?
Yeah, that's kind of more that through just kind of us doing the visual effects for it.
Oh, okay, cool.
And not really as much of a creative impact, but it is an awesome script, and it's going to be really, really creepy. It's kind of the next step of the found footage movie, kind of making that a little bit more epic.
Oh, that's cool.
Now, what is coming up? What is the thing that you're most excited about that's coming up next?
What is
for
the
you?
Movie you're doing that you hope we don't do on this show?
I think it's kind of perfect for the show, even if it's successful, because it's a kind of gonzo crazy concept. It's called War of the Ages, and so it's pretty much like Bill and Ted meets 300. All of the emperors and conquerors from history kind of get brought together into a big epic battle royal.
This movie sounds amazing. So you're bringing in all like famous people from history to fight each other.
It's like Genghis Khan, Napoleon, Julius Caesar, and Alexander the Great, and it's a lot of big epic battles like that. But it's with its sense of fun. It's not. But I actually met Keanu Reeves once, and I was telling him about it, and I pitched it as Bill and Ted meets 300. And he put his hands over his head like the guitar thing and did like excellent in his best.
That's awesome.
That is amazing. Liam, thank you so much for calling in and talking to us.
Yeah, thank you guys. Keep up the good work, and hopefully I'm not on the next one.
See you later. Bye. Bye. So that is the end of How Did This Get Made? Thank you to everybody. Jonah, thank you so much. Where can people find you? What do you want to tell people?
They can go to jonahray.com. They could go at jonahray on Twitter, and they can listen to the Nerdist podcast or watch The Soup.
All right, perfect. Yeah. Anybody else got anything else?
At Miss June Diane.
I am Twitter. At Paul Scheer. Jason?
I'm not on Twitter. I'm, I don't know. But follow Bob Dukas' Twitter.
Funny.
I'll plug Bob Dukas' Twitter.
And listen to his podcast here on the Earwolf channel, one of the funniest podcasts. Also, just a reminder, NTSF SD SUV is still on Adult Swim. We're in our final episodes here, so check that out. Thursdays at 12:15. Thank you very much. Tune in next time. Bye-bye. Earwolf.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio Boom.com. The wolf dead.